Okay, well, they touted, Mr. Vavacek touted your virtues here, so we'll see, just see how well you do.
Very good.
Okay.
May it please the court. In this case, Ms. Davis went to trial on three separate counts, each related to pseudoephedrine manufacturing and a methamphetamine. At trial, the defense had one witness. That was her treating pulmonologist for the last 15 or so years. Prior to trial, the pulmonologist had prescribed to Ms. Davis 4 months' worth of pseudoephedrine. She suffered from COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. He classified it as severe. It's undisputed. Several of the government witnesses testified that they witnessed Ms. Davis have severe breathing episodes. Longtime neighbor, longtime friend. They also testified to help her get through those breathing episodes. She took pseudoephedrine pills, which she had purchased legally at the store.
As a result of this prescription?
No. She had been purchasing over the five-year period
the stuff that she had
pseudoephedrine.
Okay, what? Tell me the circumstances of this, because apparently there was the doctor and a PA testified, and they really didn't help your client because they talked about that they wouldn't recommend pseudoephedrine because it dries out the lungs for somebody with COPD or something. What's that all about?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but that's not what was testified to. Immediately before opening statements, the court gave its ruling, and it was a definitive ruling, and I've set it forth in page 12 of the addendum. Quote, the prescription that he, meaning Dr. Painter, wrote recently is not admissible because it has no relevance. If he starts getting into expert testimony as opposed to just stating his treatment of Ms. Davis, his diagnosis and the like, then it is objectionable and the court will not allow it in.
The prescription,
and
which was
why would he prescribe?
It was outside the conspiracy time period. No, so
correct.
I'm taking a diversion here, but so why is that relevant? A prescription you had after the conspiracy.
It directly corroborates. Why would her pulmonologist prescribe pseudoephedrine to her if it wasn't necessary? It directly corroborated our sole defense, which is she didn't buy the pseudo to manufacture meth. Oh, by the way, there was absolutely no evidence from any witness that she had ever manufactured, sold methamphetamine. The testimony and the prescription from the pulmonologist that he prescribed 4 months worth of pseudoephedrine to her in October of 2015, went directly to our defense. The judge redetermined that because it occurred outside of the conspiracy scope, it wasn't admissible. And we respectfully disagree with that finding. However, the government, when it was cross-examining Dr. Painter, asked, well, you never prescribed pseudoephedrine.
Why is he on the stand?
He's on the stand to confirm, one, that Ms.
In the defense case?
Yes. He was our only witness. He confirmed that, one, she has COPD, what the symptoms of COPD are. We couldn't ask him anything about pseudoephedrine or how pseudoephedrine would assist the breathing episodes. That was precluded from our case.
Because it had not been disclosed earlier?
Well, we had disclosed every page of medical records that we had obtained from Dr. Painter's office.
No, but I mean, had he been disclosed as an expert and what his opinions were?
Technically, no. He was not disclosed as an expert, even though...
What I recall the district court said was you hadn't disclosed it.
But then, during his cross-examination, let's assume that the district court was correct in saying that that was not disclosed, and so you can't talk about that. The government, in its cross-examination, then asked the very question that it sought to exclude, but they limited it to the course of the conspiracy. They asked Dr. Painter, well, you never prescribed pseudoephedrine between the years of 2010 and 2015, did you? No. But he couldn't say that 2 months later, I gave her 4 months worth of pseudoephedrine. But that wasn't fair.
But he, she could have purchased the pseudoephedrine for self-medication under the limits herself.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And so you wanted to establish with him that pseudoephedrine was a drug, whether you purchased it over the counter or by prescription, that was beneficial to her as a with her affliction. That did she testify that she used it and was self-medicating with it, or was there any evidence of that kind?
There was significant evidence from neighbors, longtime friend, that she suffered, the witness described it as her breathing episodes from COPD would be like as if someone had just ran a long race. And when she had these episodes, they witnessed that she had consumed, she had taken pills, pseudoephedrine pills, to assist her to be able to breathe normally again.
Had in all of the medical records you say that were produced, had Dr. Painter ever suggested or discussed the use of pseudoephedrine prior to his having prescribed it here?
No.
So how does that prevent you from presenting a complete defense? I mean, if it was so important, and he had treated her for a number of years for the COPD with the nebulizer, and post-conviction, he decides, "Oh, I'm going to give her a prescription." How is that kept her from a complete defense?
Pseudoephedrine is a medication that one can buy over the counter, and that's what happened. That's what Ms. Davis did for 5 years.
But there's no mention in the medical records that she had told Dr. Painter that she'd used it in the past or that he'd suggested it.
That's correct.
Okay.
When she was placed on pretrial release, would it have been risky for her to go to the store and buy pseudoephedrine? Yes. She probably would have, her pretrial release probably would have been revoked. So she went to Dr. Painter and obtained the pseudoephedrine.
Who had been her doctor during all this time for the COPD?
Correct. There was and in the brief there's an entire laundry list of medications that Ms. Davis was obtaining. An important point is in the government's brief, it indicates that the defense has forfeited its ability to raise this issue on appeal because we didn't introduce this prescription until at the close of evidence. The facts are very, very clear. The court had this prescription prior to trial. We discussed it at the pretrial conference. The government filed significant pleadings attempting to keep it out. It was discussed. Judge Reed had entered an order prohibiting the parties discussing anything until during jury selection. And it was until immediately before opening statements where she gave her ruling that it wasn't coming in.
Well, I thought it even had exhibit number, exhibit F.
Correct.
So somebody, Mark, and then I think was discussed pretrial anyway when it was precluded, right?
Correct.
Well, I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay. So the government opened the door with Dr. Painter when it asks, you never prescribed pseudoephedrine during these specific times, did you? And of course, he has to answer no. In rebuttal, that was our only witness, was Dr. Painter. He directly corroborated, he would have directly corroborated her defense, which is that she didn't buy the pills to manufacture meth. She bought the pills, as was testified to by...
Well, he wouldn't say that. He would just say he prescribed them later.
That would have been what we would have been able to argue.
Right.
Look at what Dr. Painter did. He gave a prescription for pseudoephedrine. We couldn't argue that because there was no evidence of that in front of the jury.
Would the doctor have testified that he would have advised her as her medical practitioner to buy pseudoephedrine over the counter and use it because it would be a heck of a lot cheaper than buying it probably prescription-wise? Was he prepared to testify that he would have told her that or did tell her that? Or how, was there anything like that?
No, there was not. The defense
testimony, I have a handwritten note here, something about the doctor and a PA. Did a PA test in rebuttal, yes. Testify in rebuttal?
So in rebuttal, after we called Dr. Painter as our only witness, the prosecution had Ms. Catherine Book, who up until that minute I hadn't been aware of. I'm handed a stack of 51 pages worth of medical records and saying she's going to testify regarding your client.
Did she treat her, your client?
She treated her for 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, for COPD.
COPD. She testified, now this is a physician's assistant. The government asked her, now did you ever tell her about purchasing pseudoephedrine? She said no.
Is this within the still within the conspiracy time frame?
Yes. And so immediately after that, I asked to recall Dr. Painter because we have all this evidence now that no medical professional ever prescribed or recommended that Ms. Davis take pseudoephedrine. In the defense's position, that opened the door to allow this evidence that we have to come in. We asked to recall Dr. Painter. That was denied as untimely. We made that request after the testimony of Catherine Book, the PA, and after the close of the evidence, immediately after the close of evidence, we had asked to reopen and recall Dr. Painter. Then we also asked for a mistrial based upon the government opening the door and then us not being able to present that prescription.
Wasn't there some out of the presence of the jury testimony with Dr. Painter vis-a-vis your recall and so forth that he somewhat backed away from pseudoephedrine as a applicable drug here? Nothing of that sort.
No, he was not recalled.
Okay,
he was cross-examined by the government.
Was it the PA that said that it's pseudoephedrine's?
Yes.
Contraindicated?
Yes. The PA testified it dries up the lungs.
Dr. Painter did not testify to that.
No.
Then my note's wrong. Okay.
The PA was asked by the government about, well, you never prescribed pseudoephedrine. No. Why not?
He testified it was contraindicated.
It dries up the lungs.
Yes. Right.
So based upon... And I set forth each element. Ms. Davis was charged with conspiracy to manufacture meth, and the crux of the evidence for that conspiracy was the pseudoephedrine logs. She was charged with possessing
I'm interrupting you because I might think slowly. Let me get back kind of what Judge Beam was asking. Was there ever an offer of proof that you made that Dr. Painter would challenge that statement that that pseudoephedrin would have been contraindicated?
There was never an offer of proof with Dr. Painter, period. We had our definitive ruling from the court as to what would be allowed and what would not be allowed.
Well, but you have an absolute right to do an offer of proof. I mean, if you'd asked for it.
Probably had an obligation to make an offer of proof.
Well, when I have a definitive ruling from the court saying that this is not coming in, and I have the prescription as an offer of proof exhibit, I think that Rule 103 states it's only when it's not apparent from the context of the exhibit that an offer of proof should be made.
When you say the door was opened on the cross examination of Dr. Painter, did you try to ask your questions on redirect?
I objected, and thank you for raising that. The government states, well, Mr. Sheets didn't object to it, so it's okay. That's not true. The transcript reflects that I objected to those questions. My objection was outside the scope of direct. That's what my objection was to.
But once that happened, did you try to ask, I'll paraphrase them as your questions, on redirect?
I did not.
Did you approach the court and say they've opened this door?
I did not.
Right.
I attempted to recall him.
Right.
Well, but in redirect, you might have, well, you know, this hindsight, but take that prescription, Exhibit F, up there and cross-examined her on that and said, well, wait a minute, here's a medical doctor with a medical degree that's just prescribed it. But
we had a definitive ruling, in my opinion.
Even a district judge needs a little help once in a while from the lawyers about issues of evidence.
Well, thank you. I'll give you a minute in rebuttal. So be prepared. Morning again, Mr. Vavacek.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Before I begin, a few points of the record I would like to correct. The defendant was indicted on July 29th, and the prescription was received on October 28th, some months later. So this was not a case of someone who immediately went in to get a prescription to avoid problems with pretrial release. To be clear, the district judge, after the conclusion of the government's rebuttal testimony, did offer the defendant the opportunity to present surrebuttal evidence. That opportunity was declined. It was only after the evidence closed, we were getting right ready for jury instructions, the witnesses were gone, that the defendant moved for a mistrial and sought to recall Dr. Painter.
Well, let's cut to the chase, and that is you're putting the PA on, and I don't care about the rest of it, but getting to the point, asking her about, and I haven't read the testimony, but you since asked her about use of pseudoephedrine for COPD. And Mr. Sheets says, well, wait a minute, that's not fair because it wasn't brought up and he was barred from getting into that. So why is it fair and how did that those circumstances arise?
Sure. And if I may, I have the transcript right here and I have the allegedly offending statements from both Dr. Painter and Dr. Book. What Dr. Painter testified was, he said, pseudoephedrine certainly wasn't in any of my notes and certainly would not recommend it specifically for the treatment of COPD or asthma. That's page 40.
Okay, so then my note was right.
Yep, that's page 40 of the transcript of his testimony. And then with respect to our rebuttal witness, the PA, Ms. Book, she said, COPD, you don't want to dry up the lungs, so it, pseudoephedrine, would be contraindicated. That's page 47. The short answer to your question.
Let me back up. What was the question you asked?
The question was, why not?
Did you try this?
Yes.
Okay, so what was your question?
Why not?
Well, then what was the question or answer before that?
The question before that was, Now, this case concerns the time period August of 2010 to June 20th of this year.
And she's treating her during this time?
Yeah. Well, that's the charged conspiracy, and she treated her during that time frame. Did you tell Lisa Davis to use up to 3 boxes of pseudoephedrine a month on a continuous basis? She answers, never. I asked, why not? She said, COPD, you don't want to dry up the lungs, so pseudoephedrine would be contraindicated.
Well, you left out an important word, maybe, COPD for asthma, based upon asthma.
Yeah, right. At the end of the day, the short answer to you, why is this fair, Your Honor, respectfully disagree with Mr. Sheets, first of all, that this was a firm, definitive ruling as this court's cases require prior to trial. We've talked about that at length in our brief. But more importantly, what did the government seek to not go into? Basically, we had made very clear at both the final pretrial conference and in a filing an amended trial brief. What happened here was right on the eve of trial, pretty much, we find out about this prescription. It was not written till the end of October. We got it on November 5th, and we were exchanging witnesses lists on November 10th, had the final pretrial on November 12th. We took, respectfully, we think, a conservative liberal view on this and said, you know, look, your treating physician can testify as a treating physician. He can talk about what he observed, what he recommended or didn't recommend to the defendant, why he did or didn't, but that it just needed to be limited to the time frame at issue in the case. And that's why that question I read to Your Honor prior to the why not, our questioning, when one goes through this, we very much tried to limit it to that. Now, the judge didn't issue a final ruling on this, but both parties, I think the judge did, we knew where it was going. It seemed like the judge was not going to be inclined to let in the prescription. I know that the one statement that Mr. Sheets seizes on from the colloquy at the jury selection, the judge said the prescription that he wrote recently is not admissible because it has no relevance.
Let me ask this. You're not going to stand on Exhibit F not being properly preserved as an issue, are you? Is that enough of an intimidating question?
We do stand on it, Your Honor. We don't think under the rules of evidence that it was properly preserved. It came up prior to trial. The reason it was marked, the way this proceeded was, the judge specifically said, right, I don't think that's timely, but I'll let you file it anyway.
When I tried cases, if you made a motion in limine and you didn't, and on some evidence, and you didn't, and I'm sure Judge Beam tried cases like, if you didn't renew it at trial, you lost it. That's not the rule anymore. And so anything that comes up that might be called a motion in limine, it's in the record. I mean, that's the new rules. So that's why I'm thinking this sounds a lot like a motion in limine here that you guys were arguing about. And under the new rules, that's an evidence. I mean, it's in evidence for review.
It's true, Your Honor. The reason there's not a Judge Reed often does written orders on motions in limine. We'll have motions in limine. The reason that didn't happen here was because of the late disclosure. I mean, this was brought to the attention by the government in its amended trial brief after receiving the prescription, among a bunch of other records from the defendant. And we were the ones who attached that to our amended trial brief, and so the defendant's citation of this in the record is to our amended trial brief, which is a bit odd. I would just, not to belabor the issue, but at the final pretrial conference, the judge said, I'm not prejudging this. Immediately after the admittedly pretty clear statement from the judge that the prescription that he wrote recently is not admissible because it has no relevance, she then, talking about the expert testimony, says, I can't rule in advance on those questions. And this issue of the expert testimony, what would Dr. Painter have testified, on that we certainly don't have any offer of proof, and we do not have a definitive ruling. Frankly, we don't know what he would say. What we do know from the cross-examination from both of them is that it seemed to have been contraindicated. Going back to the post-indictment prescription, what we call it, this prescription is not relevant under 401, and its probative value is substantially outweighed by confusion of the issues, misleading the jury, and so forth under 403. It is, as the case law recognizes, highly suspect simply by virtue of its timing. Recall the timeline, Your Honors. This was written 4 months after the end of the charged conspiracy, 3 months after indictment, and less than a month before trial. This court has been rightly skeptical of similar evidence. The government could not find a case involving a prescription for pseudoephedrine written after indictment, but by analogy found cases involving amended tax returns or tax returns that were filed after indictment, serving the same purpose, that is, trying to show that the requisite level of intent didn't exist during the time period charged in the indictment.
But in fairness to the defendant, this was probably a period of time when she was precluded from buying pseudoephedrine of any amount over the counter, right?
That may be have been a condition of her pretrial release. I'm not
have needed a prescription during that period of time to fill her needs.
I don't believe there's any evidence in the record of that second conclusion. As the court has indicated and Mr. Sheets indicated, there is no law requiring a prescription for pseudoephedrine in the state of Iowa. Rather, there are just certain limits on the quantities that you can purchase or how fast you can purchase it. The two cases that we rely on in our brief, Radke and GM Balvo, both involved tax returns. The post-indictment filed tax returns. The GM Balvo case was, like this case, an asserted violation of the constitutional right to present a complete defense. And that is how the argument is phrased here on appeal. In GM Balvo, the court considered this sort of post-indictment evidence in the context of the right to present a complete defense and held that there was no unfettered right to offer testimony that is otherwise inadmissible under the standard rules of evidence. And what's remarkable about the case that we have here at bar was we didn't just have suspicious timing, but when looks at the medical records themselves that came with the prescription, they made clear that she had come to the doctor, not necessarily with a complaint about some health issue or ailment, but rather that she was being investigated for pseudoephedrine abuse. This is also attached to our amended trial brief, where Exhibit F is as well. And the doctor says in the records, quote, I can prescribe small amounts of pseudoephedrine to see if this would be helpful to her and minimize suspicion of diversion. The doctor expressly said that. Also, the records made clear that he was not prescribing it for COPD, but rather for seasonal allergic rhinitis, which wouldn't square with the defendant's position that she needed to consistently take large amounts of pseudoephedrine for 5 straight years.
Seasonal, is that because you're allergic to some blossoms on the trees or things like that? Is that
just like right about now, small, I presumed spring and fall. But of course, we didn't hear from the doctor on that specific issue. The other thing was the defendant's stated reason. Judge pressed Mr. Sheets at the colloquy right before the jury selection about why this could be relevant. And Mr. Sheets said, I think the evidence is going to show that because Ms. Davis was receiving the heat from law enforcement in buying it and ingesting pseudoephedrine, that's one of the reasons he prescribed it, because he recognized it helped. This evidence is not relevant, and to the extent it is very marginally relevant, it's the danger of confusion of the issues outweighed it, and the court should not reverse the jury's conviction for want of that evidence. Going back to the constitutional claim in which this is framed, the seminal case in this area is the Holmes case at the Supreme Court. That was what the Supreme Court ruled was an arbitrary rule of evidence that banned a defendant from presenting evidence of a third party's guilt if there was forensic evidence in the record tending to show that the defendant was guilty. It was just a bright-line arbitrary rule in the words of the Supreme Court. Judge Beam, you authored, Your Honor, authored a case called West, which talked about this a little bit, and on page 1019 of that case wrote, the constitutional right to this defense does not entitle the admission of otherwise inadmissible evidence, and I'm paraphrasing that. What we have here, we cannot find a case that holds that the application of the federal rules of evidence for basic relevancy is applied arbitrarily and would violate the Constitution of the United States. Rather, this was a weighing decision. If the court finds that judge made a final definitive ruling, it was a weighing decision. It was not an arbitrary application of some rule. Unless there are any further questions, I see my time is about up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Sheets, I'll give you a minute.
That's all I need, Your Honors. 1 minute. There's a case from this Eighth Circuit says, absent a cold, headache, or sinus problems, there are remarkably few things you can do with pseudoephedrine except make illegal narcotics. Absent a cold, headache, and sinus problems. Well, in this case, we had COPD, chronic and severe. The doctor, in his notes, he wasn't allowed to testify to this because it would have went to his treatment. But he said in his medical reports that were given to the prosecutor, I prescribed pseudoephedrine to her to divert this prosecution. I can't remember the exact words Mr. Vavracek just quoted for them. That supports Mr. Vavracek is somehow implying that Dr. Painter was somehow in
collusion.
Yes, that's a ridiculous statement. The second thing goes to this offer proof issue. Why wasn't an offer proof of Dr. Painter done? Well, there are several ways to do an offer proof, and if the court looks at the colloquy, Judge Reed asked me, well, what is this judge going to testify to? And I set forth what he would testify to, including he's going to explain why he prescribes pseudoephedrine and why pseudoephedrine helps people with COPD. That counsel's offer of proof, the prescription, and the definitive ruling that it's not coming in, I think any experienced lawyer would take that as, okay, we need to move on to what our defense is going to be now.
Thank you very much. I want to thank you both for your arguments. Was that our last argument today?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a moment of personal privilege here to just thank the lawyers for coming over from Iowa. As you note here, Judge Rossiter is one of our newest district judges here in Nebraska. And if you don't know, he was a law clerk for Judge Beam. And so we took this opportunity for three Nebraska judges to sit here and try and hear your arguments, which required us to get some cases outside of Nebraska. So I thank you for coming. to Nebraska. And when we have cases in Omaha, it's not unusual that we bring cases over, but usually from Des Moines or Sioux City. I don't know quite how we got so far away, but I want to thank you for coming. It's also a matter that this is my last week as sitting as a judge. And so I'm just really happy to see Mr. Sheets, who I